A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll settle in a bit and turn our attention to the possibilities that can arise from combining music and meditation. Throughout the academic year, Princeton University hosts several guided meditation sessions that incorporate performances by some of their visiting musicians, and we'll drop in for a recent program for a sense of how it all comes together. My guests will be Matthew Weiner, Associate Dean of Religious Life at Princeton University, and Dasha Koltenyuk, Marketing and Outreach Manager for Princeton University Concerts. As always, let's start off today's program with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. Notre Dame's grand organ may have suffered less damage than anticipated in the raging fire that tore through the cathedral earlier this month. According to the Associated Press, the organ was inspected by Pascal Corin, who said he found no damage from the fire as the organ's internal temperature did not rise any higher than 63 degrees Fahrenheit. The April 15th fire destroyed much of the cathedral's roof and collapsed its famed spire. The seven-week strike by the musicians of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra may be at an end after the musicians and management were brought together for negotiations by Mayor Rahm Emanuel. According to the Chicago Sun-Times, both sides reached the agreement during the Friday meeting, and the musicians were scheduled to ratify the agreement on Saturday, April 27th. Emanuel told the newspaper that he arranged the meeting because of the wide range of people in the city who had been affected, including the musicians, stagehands, and city restaurants that rely on symphony-goers. Those are just some of the headlines this week from around the arts world. If you meditate, do you prefer to do so in silence or with music? Maybe some quiet mood music or chimes. Now, what about a live music performance, perhaps by a string quartet, a solo pianist, or even a percussion ensemble? At Princeton University, that very range of musical options has set the acoustic stage, literally, for a meditation series now 4 years in the running. In partnership with the university's Office of Religious Life, Princeton University Concerts invites some of its visiting artists to provide the music for the program, an extension of regular meditation sessions offered throughout the academic year. The guided meditation sessions are led by Matthew Weiner, Associate Dean of Religious Life. The idea to add music to the mix arose when Dasha Koltenyuk, who had joined the meditation sessions as a student, returned to the university as Marketing and Outreach Manager for Princeton University Concerts.
I've been going to meditations on campus every Thursday since I was a sophomore. When I started my job at Princeton University Concerts, I continued to go, and I just found that whenever Dean Matt would ring the meditation bowl to end the meditation, in the 30 seconds that that bell resounded, I just meditated more than I did the entire half hour of the actual guided meditation. There was something about listening to sound fade away that resonated so much with me, and I found myself listening to the vibrations and feeling the vibrations in such a powerful way that I thought, how cool would it be to listen to music, to performance in this way? And our goal at Princeton University Concerts is always to try to figure out new ways of getting people to access music in as visceral a way as possible. And so it just seemed like a wonderful thing to try. The studying is such an easy way to really focus in on music.
Had you ever done meditation with live music before, or this was a completely new idea you just wanted to try?
It was a completely new idea, and we didn't really have a model to go after. So once we had this idea, we met with Dean Matt and said, okay, how can we structure this? And at the time, we were having the Calidore String Quartet in a mini residency, and we thought that, you know, they're this young up-and-coming group who might be game to try something like this. And so we actually included them on the conversation about what this might look like. And one of the first questions we thought about was, well, what should they play? You know, what we've only ever had a sound, you know, just the striking of a bell, but what do you play? And we quickly realized that it wasn't about, you know, you might think of traditional spa music, relaxing music, when you think of music and meditation, but actually the point is just to really listen in and to focus on whatever you're hearing. And so we thought that we should try playing a range of pieces, you know, from something more mellow to something more exciting. I remember they did selections from Bach's Art of the Fugue, which is slower and contrapuntal and more pensive. And they also did Schubert's Death of a Maiden, which is, you know, passionate and energetic. And so when we tried it, that worked, because it wasn't, again, it wasn't about relaxing. It was just about listening very intently to whatever it is that's being around you.
And now, so you've had the quartet, you've had pianists. What other range of artists have you had?
It's been a very diverse range. We've had percussion do one, and that really kind of tested this theory that any kind of music works, because percussive sound can be, you know, I think it's the last thing you think of when you think of meditation, but it really works. We've had Pekka Kuusisto improvise on electric violin. We've had Bobby McFerrin do an improvised vocal meditation. We've had Abigail Washburn on banjo and Wu Fei on guzheng, which is this traditional Chinese imperial instrument. Tabe Zimmerman on viola, Martin Frost on clarinet. We've had quite a range of musicians and types of music.
How have the artists reacted when you first presented this as something you'd like them to do as part of their tour or their stop in Princeton?
They've been very, very open to it. I think the concept is a very intriguing one. And I think what excites our artists the most is that it kind of hands them the ideal audience, because it hands them people who are intently listening even before they play a single note. So they've all been very curious about it. They've all wondered what the right piece is to play, and I think are all very relieved when we tell them you can play anything. And their response has uniformly been a wonderful one. They've all been very moved by the experience. We've had musicians cry afterwards because it was so visceral. We've had musicians say that they wish that every audience was like that.
Once you had the chance to really try it, what were your thoughts? How did it meet up with your initial imaginations about what it would be like?
Oh, it completely blew my mind. I think I knew that it would be something special, but I didn't anticipate just how moved I would be. And I felt that I now struggle in a traditional concert setting, that I just want all of them to be live music meditations. I've also found that each one that we do is very different. No two live music meditations are the same, and I think it's because it's such a remarkably personal experience. Because you're so attuned, usually people meditate for up to half an hour before the music even starts. Sometimes it's just for a few minutes, but if you're sitting there for half an hour just in silence, and all of a sudden there is music, you experience the music in such a raw way that it just is in line with who you are in that moment in time. It's the only way I can kind of describe it. And so every time is very different. So I never know what to expect, but I always leave it feeling tremendously moved and excited and feeling the potential of this. I mean, this is something that people who have never been to a classical music performance have come to this and have so easily been able to relate to the music because of the setting. And it's also something that people who've gone to tons of concerts have come to and have never experienced music in that way. A lot of people have said that this is something that they feel they need in their lives. One person was saying that after live music meditation, she went to the grocery store, and there was this long line there, and she just felt so happy. She didn't care. You know, it was like the little things in everyday life suddenly just fall into place, and you find this sense of contentment is too weak a word, but you just notice the world around you in a more attune and in-tune way.
That was Dasha Koltenyuk, marketing and outreach manager at Princeton University Concerts. Weiner said he didn't have to add anything in the way he led the session, merely letting the music become a part of it.
Normally what we do is we have a guided meditation for 45 minutes. In this case, what we do is we just do that guided piece, but we do it right at the very beginning, and then we allow the musicians to play, or have the musicians play, and then they play for basically the whole time. So instead of the meditation being focused on my instructions and on meditation for, you know, the period, the meditation becomes a preparation for meditating on something else, which is music.
Does it vary at all depending on who the musicians are or just from session to session?
Each time I guide meditation, it's different. It's always custom designed to the particular moment, the particular community that's with us. When there's someone who's going to be playing music, having some sense of what the person's going to play ahead of time, speaking with them ahead of time, can also influence the particular instruction that I might give. Within the school of Buddhism that I kind of come from, there's dozens and dozens of different kind of ways to guide meditation, instructions to give. And so, you know, with each case, we kind of give guidance that might kind of lean people to be experiencing this particular kind of music or this particular piece of music.
When you speak with the musicians ahead of time, is there any advice or coaching that you offer them, assuming this might be the first time they're involved in this type of atmosphere?
No, so we provide logistical guidance. We explain to them what's going to happen because it's something that's going to be new for them. So we don't want them to be surprised. So we explain, everyone will be coming in silence, sitting in silence. There'll be a bell. There'll be some instruction. We ask you to then be silent for 5 minutes and then for you to start the music. That's really all we do. I think part of the reason we go about it that way is that then they get to experience the silence, the meditative silence, freshly. And every musician has said that it's a unique experience for them. They haven't experienced silence like that before, that the silence is very different than if there was no one in the room. And this is like a way of them and us kind of acknowledging that although we're just being quiet, our silence is active. Our silence is changing the space of the room and changing the music that the musicians play.
From the point of view of the leader of the meditation session and also a participant, is there a different atmosphere that this live music provides? Anything unique about the experience as opposed to either having quiet music in the background or just silence?
It's definitely qualitatively different, and it's hard to put a finger on what it is that makes it different. One of the things that makes it different is that normally people who come to a meditation are there to meditate. People who are interested in meditation plan to meditate. A lot of the people who come to our music meditations are people who are really coming to hear music. They may or may not be interested in meditation. There are some incredible musicians playing. They've come to hear them. And then, they're being given some instruction, quite often for the first time. They've never meditated before. So that's one way that the experience is quite different for me as an instructor, and probably for them as people who, I'm not sure that I've ever, I don't know that I'm interested in meditating. I've never meditated before. I'm doing it in this particular environment. So that's something that makes it all quite different. Another thing that makes it different is, normally when you're guiding meditation, it's on a particular part of your body or on the breath or on an idea. In this case, we're meditating on something that people tend not to meditate on. We're meditating on the experience of music. And so that just is, again, qualitatively very different from what normal meditation sessions are about.
How would you describe the range of participants?
This is one of the parts that I find really special for me. And I should say I find it special as a chaplain. I'm a chaplain on this campus. When I'm guiding meditation in these sessions for music, I'm still a chaplain. I'm doing chaplaincy from my perspective, and I'm doing it with people who may or may not understand it that way. They're coming to hear music. They tend to be music lovers. They tend to be classical music lovers. It's just a really different audience than what I normally have, which are students and faculty and staff who are coming because they're under a lot of stress. Their lives are stressful. They want to have some peaceful time over a lunch meditation. So the audience is different both in terms of who they are and often in terms of why they come. But then ultimately, as a chaplain or as someone who wants to teach meditation, we want to create spaces where there's a range of people who can come for a range of reasons and get some kind of nourishment, call it spiritual nourishment or inner nourishment or religious nourishment. It doesn't really matter.
What are you hoping to create with the space and with this opportunity for the campus at large?
On the one hand, I don't have any answer, nor do I want to have an answer for what are we trying to accomplish. There's some beautiful music that can be played. We can do some guided meditation that helps us listen in a more sensitive way. And then it's just kind of open for whatever people's experiences are. So normally, if you do guided meditation, the goal is either to reduce stress or to have more insight into the way that your mind and heart work. Those are kind of central purposes of meditation. And then in this case, it's just saying to ourselves, oh, here's an interesting opportunity. This is going to be something curious. This is going to be something new to us. And it's merging different worlds. And so for us, in a way, that's kind of enough. I think for the music concert series, their interest is just increasing the number of people who are interested in listening to music, increasing the kinds of people who might be interested in listening to music. And so for me, I might say almost the opposite. I'm interested in finding people who might be interested in meditation without knowing it. And so here's an opportunity to say, oh, people have come not to meditate, but to listen to music, and they find themselves meditating. And what does that do for them? The American version of meditation is often assumed to be a solo act, an individual act, something that I myself am doing. But according to the way the tradition was set up, you actually can't really meditate properly unless you're in a group or unless you have a community. You can meditate by yourself, but you need to be in community in one way or the other. The idea is simply that we can't actually be on a spiritual path and heal ourselves unless we have friends. You know, it's fine to be meditating on your own, and we have to do that at various times. But community itself is actually part of the way that meditation is able to work. And so the idea of, you know, I'm meditating for my own purposes, those are understandable and do help in various ways. But they need to be put into this larger context of, if I don't have a community of friends in some way, I'll never really be able to meditate properly and heal myself properly and reduce my stress properly and understand my heart properly. That's important stuff to say. And one of the things that a concert that this format does is this very thing. It's like we're listening to music. We're here with the musicians. We're here together as a group. And it gets back to this idea that I mentioned earlier, where the musicians as a group, they all say, if there was no one in this room, it would have felt very differently than everyone in the room meditating in silence together. It means that somehow, as a community together, we're creating the silence, which is a very different thing than if one person was meditating.
That was Matthew Weiner, Associate Dean of Religious Life at Princeton University. I attended a recent session held in Richardson Auditorium in Alexander Hall on the Princeton campus. When I arrived, people had already begun assembling, seated on chairs or cushions placed in a circle around the piano, where pianist Paul Lewis was seated, preparing to provide the oral accompaniment to our meditation journey. Weiner began with a traditional guided meditation that invited participants to settle down and begin focusing their awareness. The hall was quiet as he spoke, punctuated with periods of silence and just an occasional shuffle as someone shifted their position, or in my case, adjusted my recorder. After a brief description of what to expect, Weiner rang a bell 3 times, and then the room plunged into silence. About 5 minutes later, Lewis began to play some Brahms and Schubert, drawn from his scheduled performance later that evening at Richardson. He played for about 20 minutes, then the last notes faded out into another 5 minutes of pure silence. Weiner again rang the bell, and after a short pause, assured us that it was appropriate to applaud if we wanted, or just let the experience soak in. I've done some meditation on my own recently, and focusing my thoughts is always a challenge. Now, listening to the music here, I felt an intriguing interplay between my thoughts, the notes, the musical themes and emotions, impressions that were later expressed by other participants when they were invited to share their responses. Someone said she felt the music flowing into her, much like the way she follows the path her breath takes when she meditates at other occasions. Another found her breath matching the rhythm of the music, unlike when she usually meditates and uses her own breath as her internal metronome. I found one of my reactions actually pretty surprising. Normally, when I attend a concert, I cringe when someone coughs because the sound interrupts my musical musings. But as we all sat together listening to this music in collective silence, I found the occasional muffled cough almost reassuring, reminding me that we were all sharing and absorbing this experience together. For his part, Lewis said it was a different, more immersive atmosphere than his regular concert performances.
the experience of starting to play out of this incredibly intense silence was something quite unique, really. It really puts you in a different place in relation to the music, I feel. And of course, everybody's sitting very close around the piano, so you feel that, you know, you're one participant of many, that everybody is participating in some way. And especially because the silences were so energetic in a very significant way.
And as far as the pieces you chose, they came from what you're doing here. Was there anything else specific that went into deciding what to play?
No, it's just what's current in my repertoire. And I was told really that there are no criteria in terms of what it should be, what type of music. It can be very fast music, it can be huge, it can be virtuosic. But I just felt that out of what I was playing at the moment, this seemed to fit the bill most of all.
Was there anything that you did in terms of the way you played it, either intentionally or maybe just feeding off of some of those feelings you expressed earlier?
I think that happens anyway. I mean, it happens in every different concert situation. And it's something, you certainly don't do it intentionally. You don't intend to play any differently. But I think it just happens as a result of the situation you're in. And I felt there were different things. You know, when being the person who's playing the music, of course you're having to deliver it, so it's fine for everybody else to be in a meditative state, but it's not fine for me to be because I have to be thinking of all sorts of, you know, technical things that keep me one side of where everybody else is, and that's fine. But you still pick up the vibe, you know, you pick up the concentration and the intensity very, very clearly. And that has an influence, inevitably, on the way you play. So, yeah, it would be different in a regular concert situation, I'm sure.
Was that a challenge in terms of, you know, meditation stresses, in some cases, one type of focus, but as you said, you needed to be in an entirely different preparatory mode in order to play?
Not really. I think that the 5 minutes of a very concentrated silence before I started, in a way, it sort of helps you to concentrate. I was saying that normally the performance begins the first step you take on stage from the moment you're seen, and you're already prepared at that point to start playing. This is different, sort of preparing yourself over a 5 minute span in silence, but it's still a preparation. And it was fascinating to me to experience how that felt.
I also spoke with two regular participants of the meditation sessions, Aaron Metro, Associate Director for Community Affairs at Princeton, and Jamie Saxon, Arts and Humanities Writer in the University's Office of Communications. Saxon said her interest came in part out of her lifelong interest in attending concerts.
I've been coming to the Princeton University Concerts Classical Music Series since I was 11 years old. So this space, Richardson Auditorium, is very special to me. I grew up in Princeton, and now I work at Princeton. So the live music meditations combine two things that feed my soul, which are classical music and stillness. And when I learned that Dasha Kotoniak had hatched this program, I was thrilled because it gave me permission to be still and to hear music, which is a magical combination.
So what brought me to the first concert was I've been trying to meditate more, and for me, I have too many thoughts in my head. And I thought maybe by introducing music, that would fill up the space and I wouldn't have as many thoughts. And it does that for me. So it's absolutely lovely to sit down and just have that music fill your mind, and you can actually feel it while you're sitting there. It relaxes your body. As Jamie says, it's absolutely magical.
Had you meditated before, and how did you respond in those first sessions or two?
So I practice yoga, and I try to practice meditation, but I find that I really only do well with a guided meditation. So Princeton University offers a weekly meditation series, which I started going to, and I find, like Aaron said, that by having the music as part of the meditation, it calms something that yogis call monkey mind, which is self-explanatory. And the focus on the breath is helpful for a lot of people, but it's not enough for me. That's how active the monkey mind is for me. And by concentrating on the music, even if my mind wanders, I let go of it and I can come back to the music. And so I find that that helps create a unique kind of stillness that you can't get with regular meditation. It's very personal.
Have you found your relationship to music or the way you listen to music, even in other formats now, has changed a little bit?
Actually, it's kind of the opposite. What I found when I started coming to the live music meditation is that it felt strangely familiar to me. And I realized very quickly that that's why I come to classical music concerts, because it quiets me. It is a permission invitation to be still and listen to the music. So I find that it's an even richer experience listening to a musician in a setting like this, because the extraneous static of sitting down, people rustling through their programs, having to clap in between pieces, all those other rituals of a concert are removed. And so there's just the purity of the musician and me. So there's a stronger connection for me. But it is familiar, so it's a good layer.
Erin, had you gone to many classical music concerts in the past?
I have not. So I don't have the same experience as Jamie. So for me to come and sit down and have classical music played was a lovely experience. Also, the proximity to the musician makes a big difference. You can feel the music not only within your body, but it envelops you. It's just an amazing experience. Mm.
My mother, who still lives in town, often comes with her friends, and it's a very special experience, and I think another example of how Princeton University reaches out to the community in lots of hidden ways that people don't know about. And for people both familiar with and new to classical music, this is a free program. This meditation is open to everyone, and I think that it creates, you know, an open but kind of sacred space to everyone. So it's an open door policy and an invitation to stillness that I think we all need in today's world.
At one of the sessions I was at, there was a gentleman there who was his first time meditating, first time here at Princeton, meditating with live music. And he spoke up at the end and he said, "I've never meditated before, but I went somewhere while I was sitting here." And that's what meditation is. And if you can hit a, you know, person for the very first time meditating with this, to me that speaks volumes.
The live music meditation programs are open to the public and held on select days during the academic year at Richardson Auditorium in Alexander Hall. No date has been set for the first session of next year, but when scheduled, more information will be available at PrincetonUniversityConcerts.org. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you on A Tempo every week about the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only because of your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for your support of the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.